thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wole. My boy Ray Will T is out. Ray Jeezy is running. Ray Jeezy is my boy Will T is late. Ray Jeezy is out. Good God. Happy New Year to you all listening to the Urban Sports Scene. You know I appreciate you all. 2020, we doing big things popping. I got a special guest. And as you all know, it's 7 o'clock. So we usually start at 8, but it's a special show. It's a 2-hour show. So 7 to 9, make sure you tune into the rest of it. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Will T would normally say this, but he's running late. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here's what we have on tap. We will have WBC featherweight champ Gary Russell Jr. on the show at 7:30. We'll have Gary's brother, super lightweight Gary Antoine Russell, on as well. At 8 o'clock, we'll talk about the Redskins hiring coach Ron Rivera. Redskins reporter Donna Hopkins from Tony McGee's Pro Football Plus will join the show. At 8:20, we'll talk NFL playoffs. At 8:30, we'll talk about the Washington Nationals signing infielder Starlin Castro and reliever Will Harris. At 8:40, We'll discuss if the Washington Wizards should bench Isaiah Thomas and start Ish Smith. Finally, at 8:50, we'll talk about the legacy of former NBA Commissioner David Stern, who passed last week. But first, right now, we have WBC featherweight champ Gary Russell Jr. on the line. What's going on, champ?
Man, what's going on, fellas? Man, how you doing?
Good, man. Happy New Year to you, man, my man. Big things. How's the family?
Man, the family's good. They're growing. They're getting big and moving around. So, you know, I'm loving it.
I love it, man. You have a great family, my man. You're a great father. You're doing big things. Other than being a champ, man, you're a great family man.
Man, I try my best. That's all I know. That's all I know. That's all I've been around. My mother, my father, mm-hmm. They've been married 30 plus years. You know, me and my wife, we've been married about 8. You know, my wife, she was the only child, so she kind of wanted a mom. And, you know, I came from a mom, so I really wasn't with the whole mom situation, but I had to, you know, I had to kind of meet her in the middle, you know. Then we got surprised with a set of twins recently last year. Mm-hmm. You know, it was my wife's idea to name them Layla and Ali, mm-hmm. So we named our twins Layla and Ali. We got 5, man, and they're growing, and they get big, get smart, moving around. So it's getting fun.
Man, you're highly blessed, my man, highly blessed. So, Gary, you have a unification title fight February 8th on Showtime. Can you tell us about your opponent and what he'll bring to the table?
Well, it should not be a unification title match.
Mm.
It's not a unification title match.
Oh, it's not? Sorry.
It's not a unification title match. He's a mandatory challenger.
Mm-hmm.
He can defend my title against another mandatory challenger. As far as the opponent goes, I think he's a very suitable opponent.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's much more talented than a lot of the guys that are champions right now. I think he'll give Leo Santa Cruz and these other guys a run for their money. He's a, I think, 2012 Olympian silver medalist. You know, but this time the amateurs no more. It's a big boy game. It's a big league. So I think he's a very suitable opponent. Like I say, we're focused. We never underestimate anybody. We prepare ourselves to the best of our ability. I'm focused. I'm grinding. And I'm hungry. Oh. In a way.
Mm-hmm. Always. How's Cam going?
Cam's going good, man. I'm sore right now and I'm hurting. But it's all good. I'm sore now. I'm saying I'm hurting, but it's funny because when anybody asks me how am I doing or how I'm feeling, and the people around my gym that know me, they tell you, and I tell them it doesn't matter. Don't matter, the job gotta get done anyway.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how messed up your day might get or might be, or whatever type of bad news that you might get, you gotta deal with it anyway. As long as you're living and breathing, life's still gonna move on. You gotta keep pushing.
Definitely.
So I tell them it don't matter. You know, job gotta get done anyway.
All right. I know you don't like getting predictions out, but give me a prediction. Give me a good one.
As far as what?
This fight. Is it stopping in that? Are you stopping it early, or you just Are you stopping there early, or are you just gonna do your work?
Nah, I'm gonna work. He's the type of fighter. He's more of a technical fighter than a lot of these other guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of these guys just want to go in there and throw punches. He's a little more technical, but it's a bit a little more technical fight. It's a bit a little more technical fight. I think my hand speed, my explosiveness, and stuff like that would definitely take over and dictate the pace of the fight and dictate the fight in general. My ring generalship, my IQ, would definitely play a big part.
Mm-hmm.
If he's reckless, if he does something reckless, it's very possible that I can catch him with something and we can end this fight early.
Ooh.
Because if I hurt him, I'm going to get him up out of there. You know, I'm one of the nicest finishers out here. You know what I'm saying? If I hurt him, I'm going to get him up out of there.
That's real talk.
You know, if not, we'll be prepared to go the full duration of 12 and be sharp and precise. You know, and perform like a champion does.
Oh, definitely. You're a champ. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. We have WBC featherweight champ Gary Russell Jr. on the line. So, Gary, you mentioned Leo Santa Cruz. I think everybody knows this dude's been ducking you. Will this fight ever happen?
I mean, I'm not sure. I can't say that Al Heyman, he definitely promised me a fight with Leo Santa Cruz. You know, but like I say, as of now, I'm not focused on the other side. We gotta get past so we can keep in your thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't, like I said, we never underestimate nobody or overlook anybody. We prepare ourselves to the best of our ability. So, all the way down the board. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But hopefully, you know what I'm saying? I can tell you this though. God willing, everything go right. We get through this boy, we brand his ass up the way it's playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do expect to have a signed contract within a certain time frame from a Leo Santa Cruz.
Ooh.
You know what I'm saying? And if not at that point, then maybe we'll probably explore some other options.
All right. Have you heard of Tevin Farmer talking noise about trying to fight you?
Yeah, I heard him. Okay. I heard that.
Okay. I just want to know what's your response to that. He popping off.
Hey, look, it's okay. He got to deal. Like I say, I got to deal with my opponent that I'm dealing with right now, and he got to get past JoJo.
Mm-hmm.
He doing a whole lot of talking, and his fight ain't even took place yet.
Yeah,
you know. So don't underestimate people. You know what I'm saying? Prepare yourself to the best of your ability. You know what I'm saying? So he got to get past JoJo. You know what I'm saying? If he get past JoJo. If I don't have a signed contract within a certain time frame, like I said, then that's definitely something that we can take place. Cause I don't do. I'm one of the fighters that I'll answer if somebody called me out.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear that? I call that. You hear me calling everybody out? Ain't nobody saying they want to fight me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So I definitely answer to that because I don't plan on being at 130. I don't want to fight at 130. I want to move up to 135.
Ooh, okay.
I'm going to vacate my title anyway to move up to 35. The only reason I would stop at 30 is just because Tevin opened his mouth.
That's real stuff, man. No, don't you think he, like, underestimating JoJo, though? Like, why is he talking? Like, worry about JoJo first.
I mean, some people do that. I can't really say, but I can say this. Tevin Farmer's been knocked out before, and he has, like, what, 3-4 losses?
Four losses, yeah.
Something like that. So I know I've competed against JoJo. I take my hat off of JoJo. You know, he's one of the fighters that's willing. He's a fighter.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to fight whoever he feels as though is the best. He's going to put it all on the line. He's going to try his best. He's going to try his hardest. And if it doesn't work, then shit, I'm going to get back in the gym. I'm going to work harder. He's a fighter. I can respect it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he fought against me. He competed against me. I'm pretty sure I taught him a couple of things within that fight. And I'm pretty sure he's learned from me. And I think he's going to take that with him. Yeah. I think he'll take that with him. I'm not sure how the fight goes. Don't get me wrong. I honestly do believe that Tevin Farmer can fight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think he can fight. He can definitely box.
Mm-hmm.
He's slick. You know, he's slick. He's crafty. You know, he can box. But you got to have some fuck you on your punches. You got to make somebody be able to respect you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you
got
to have something to make them respect you. He's relying on he's relying on being able to touch a person a certain amount of times to make them be fearful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and respect. Because, you know, he has decent hand speed, you know, good reflexes, good timing. So when you fight these guys that doesn't have the reflexes or the speed as you, you can make these guys second guess themselves because they go throw a punch and you every time they punch, you're touching them once or twice or two, three times. So they're going to question throwing shots.
Yeah.
But when you're fighting somebody that doesn't care about that and they're going to put their hands up and they're embracing the fact that I know you're going to throw these punches. I'm going to put my hands up. I'm going to step forward. And these punches is going to do nothing but touch my gloves and my arm. You're throwing wasteful punches, and when I get there, I'm sending heat, and this shit hurt. And this shit hurt. It ain't just no pity pack.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's different. You know, you're dealing with a different monster when you're dealing with something like that. I don't think he has the ability to keep a real animal off of him. I think Jojo Diaz is going to test him in this fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good fight. It's a good matchup. It's a real good matchup.
No, I agree. I think it's a very good matchup. I'm with you. I think it's a very challenging. It's a challenging matchup. That's why I'm saying like you got to pay attention to JoJo because this is a good fight.
Yeah. Because to be honest with you, I can't really pick a winner for this fight.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I can't pick a winner. I can't pick a winner.
Mm-hmm.
I can say this. I'll always pick intellect over athleticism.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tevin Farmer is a better athlete than JoJo Diaz is.
Yeah.
I think he's more athletic than JoJo Diaz is. But I think JoJo Diaz has a certain level of focusness. He has a certain level of tenacity. He's youthful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he brings a level of intellect into the ring as well.
Yeah.
You know, he brings a level of intellect into the ring as well. He's not as fast as Tevin,
yeah.
You know. And I don't think he's as quick as on his feet as Tevin and stuff like that. But I think he can break him down. If out over a duration of time, you know. So we will see. Tevin's going to have to be in shape because he's not expecting to knock nobody out because he don't got no pop. He don't got no fuck you on his body.
I love that term, man. I ain't going to lie. I'm going to steal that one. I like that one.
Man, look, you got to steal it. You can have it,
I can have it. Thank you, man. I appreciate it, Jared.
Look, that's what it's supposed to be like, man. We're supposed to help each other out.
I appreciate you, my man.
Come on, man.
I'm gonna use that in the streets. I'm gonna be like, yeah, I'm gonna put some fuck you in my punches, dog. I appreciate that, man. All right, so Gary, I'm a obviously we in the DMV, and you always hear people from B-More talking about Tank and acting like, you know, Tank is ready for Gary or Gary doesn't want to fight Tank or whatever. Speak on that.
They
man.
Say Gary don't want to
yeah,
fight
you know,
Tank.
People from B-More. You know, people from B-More. You know, people from B-More say that.
Okay, I mean, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, but that's what the sport of boxing is about.
Yeah.
You know, you're supposed to have fans to genuinely support their hometown, you know, fighters and et cetera, you know, and I'm all for it, you know what I'm saying? But just all I'm saying is, for one, I'm going to just put it out there on the record. It's not from personal against anything. I know Shorty, you know what I'm saying? I know him since he's probably maybe like 12 or something, probably since he first started boxing. You know, he's known me forever. You know what I'm saying? It's never nothing personal. He just came up in my era, and you around my weight class, and if your last name not Russell, you can get it. You know what I'm saying? That's just it. So, hey, there ain't nothing personal against him.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying? But even the people that's in Baltimore that support them and everything, they just look around and listen.
Mm-hmm.
You hear me calling everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear nobody saying they want to fight me.
It's real talk.
You don't hear none of them saying they want to fight me. You don't even hear Tank saying they want to fight me.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear Tank Team saying they want to fight me. You don't hear him responding to. If he does respond, he's responding at this point to just save face because people are like, damn, Shorty, what's up?
Mm-hmm.
You ain't mad. You ain't saying nothing. Like, what's going on? You know what I'm saying? I'm a real man, so I understand the situation, and I don't take it personally. I just want to get in a lane and fight. Let's make this shit happen.
I know. You know the area wants it, though, right? I mean, you know.
Man, listen. Everybody wants to fight.
Yeah, listen, man.
We don't even have to have titles. We can
Good.
Just
yes.
go somewhere mm-hmm. and fight. Yeah. The city, the fans, everybody would want to see that fight.
Yeah, man. It would be.
You know what I'm saying? I told them we can meet at a catchweight.
Yeah. It would be a classic.
But, man. But you gotta pay attention, though. I put something out on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And after Tank's fight, not with Gamboa, but the one before Gamboa, after his last fight, a reporter asked him, don't you think a fight, you know, you just fought in Baltimore, your hometown, don't you think a fight with Barry Russell Jr. would be a good fight? Tank immediately said no. And then Floyd grabbed the mic and said, well, Barry Russell Jr., I think he's a suitable opponent. I don't believe he's competing at 130 as of yet. Maybe if he move up to 130 and win a title or something, then maybe we'll take that fight. That was some bullshit right there, y'all. I'm just going to let y'all know.
It is.
That was because, one, how in the hell are you, somebody asked Tank a question. How are you going to take the mic from him and answer the question for him? That just don't even make sense. Tank, you's a grown man. You know what I'm saying? You's a grown man, so you look at this man ask your whole question for you. Cool beans. But this is what really gets me, though. This is the real part.
Uh-huh.
He said that Gary Russell Jr. isn't at 130, et cetera. He don't think I'm competing at 130. But he was just about to fight Abner Morris.
Yeah.
Abner Morris was a 122-pound champion that moved up to 126 and became a 126-pound champion. He never competed at 130. That was about to be his opponent, but he suffered an eye injury and had a detached retina, so they had to fight the guy that he fought.
Mm-hmm.
So don't try to trick and bamboozle the people or the fans and make it seem like, you know, well, if he was bigger, if he was at a different weight class, you was just about to fight the guy that's in the same weight class that I'm competing in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what's the difference? Don't try to trick to everybody else. You know, I can tell you one thing, you can't trick me. And I'm going to make it be known. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the ones that's going to point it out.
So you think it's more of like the business of Mayweather just in the business of boxing, just trying to, you know, obviously handle his boxer the right way to get him to a certain level?
I mean, it's possible. I mean, it could be very possible that politics plays a factor. But at the end of the day, we are entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
We're entertainers. We're here to entertain the fans. The fans want to see fights made.
Yeah.
The fans want to see certain people fight. The fans want to see the people, the best people fight the best people. And I think that you take away from the fans as well as the fighters when you start doing stuff like that to not fight certain people purposely because you don't want to fight this person because this person brings too much of a risk,
mm-hmm.
you know, or something like that. I mean, that takes away the fighter spirit. Like, well, you're supposed to be a fighter. What type of shit is that?
Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be that dude, right? Everybody talking about you.
You're supposed to be a fighter.
Yeah. Supposed to be. Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you. That's the thing that kills me. Like, this is the opportunity. Like, this could be a Vegas-style fight in the area. I won't even call it DMV. In the area. And, like, we're not being graced with that opportunity. You know what I mean? Because of boxing politics. It's just like, to me, it should definitely happen.
Man, look, I've been asking for it to happen.
Oh, I know. I've seen it.
I've been calling for it to happen. You know, listen, all I can do at this point is compete against the mandatory challenges that I've been doing because none of the other champions is willing to compete against me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to be honest with you, none of the other champions are fighting anybody. They fighting bums. Who the hell are your Santa Cruz is fighting?
I know. That's the sad
thing. Who the hell Tank just fought Gamboa, and Gamboa had a torn Achilles in the second round.
Tank
was tired.
I know. That weight didn't
Tank stop. Was tired.
I know.
And after the fifth round, he was throwing 15 punches. I do that. I hit a motherfucker with 15 in 5 seconds. Come on, man.
Oh, man. Hey, Gary, man, you know I appreciate having you on, man. You are that dude, man. Anything you want to say before you dip off?
Man, I just want to tell my fans, the true fans that support me and love me, that I appreciate y'all. I draw my energy from y'all. I bring all of that with me in the ring when I compete. I thank you so, so much, because energy is very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Stay behind me. We're going to keep rocking and rolling. You know what I'm saying? To the haters, I don't need tripping off y'all.
I know that's right. Don't pay them dudes. Don't cast no attention.
That's right. That's right.
No attention. Hey, Gary, man, you know I appreciate you, my man. Big things hopping for you in 2020. Guaranteed, claim it.
Thank you, man. I appreciate y'all too, man.
All right, man. Thanks again, Gary.
Man, enjoy the rest of y'all night, fellas. I'm already getting this down.
I know.
Everybody else probably laid back in the bed. You know what I'm saying? Hey, look, I already worked out once today. I'm back at it.
My man.
I'm back at it, man. I ain't probably don't get out there about 10:30.
My man, Grindhouse, 24/7. Oh, no man.
That's right, man. Enjoy the rest of y'all day, right, fellas, man. Thank you for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Gary. That is WBC featherweight champ Gary Russell Jr. That's the homie, man. Gary is that's a cool dude, man. As you could tell, that segment was a little bit X-rated, but I don't care, man. That's the dude. He was rated all X-rated. He was giving you that passion, giving you that real, man. You know what I'm saying? So I appreciate you. Hey, we will have Gary's brother, undefeated super lightweight Antoine, on the show after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Save for Ages. You dig? Deuces.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. For a solo. But tonight,
don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. What's up with the beer? Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom. Explosion.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole. Will T is a little late. Ray Jeezy's out. But, you know, I got the future right here on the line, man. The future. Because when I saw the dude fight initially, man, at the MGM up at the Harbor, I saw something special. Right now, we have undefeated super lightweight Gary Antoine Russell on the line. What's going on, Gary Antoine?
Hey, how are you, my king? I'm on the battlefield every day.
Oh, man, I'm good, man. Happy New Year, man. Happy 2020.
Appreciate that, man. I'm glad to be alive, 2020.
Oh, man.
A lot of people that haven't even seen a day at my age. You know, I'm still young.
Oh, you are, man. And you know what? It's funny, because I remember we were at the gym, and we did a live show there, and I remember just meeting you for the first time, and after that day, I came across, it came to mind and said, this is the most intelligent young dude I've seen in a long time. The most intelligent young dude.
Hey, I guess logic is overrated today. You know, people either think too much or not thinking enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just glad to have a family that got me on the right track.
Of course, man.
They gave me at least a certain type of mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a specific one.
Nah, man, you're blessed, man. To me, you're ahead of the game for real. When it comes at your age, you're ahead of the game. So Gary Antoine, you also
yes,
have a fight February 8th on the same card as your brother. Can you tell us about your opponent?
Can I talk about my opponent?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's short. He's strong. Mm-hmm. I know he's gonna bring his physicals best.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure he looked at a couple of my fights.
Yeah.
He sees that I'm fast. That I probably outskill him. You know, in certain aspects. So that's gonna force him to just bring only his physical best.
Mm.
You know, because certain opponents, they even wanna de-escalate themselves to certain things, certain outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's either my opponent is better than me, so I just gotta be in shape.
Yeah.
Or my opponent is better than me, but he have a flaw. And I'm gonna just work on that area.
Got you.
And this opponent, I don't believe that he see any flaws in any of my fights. I don't see too many flaws in my fights. I mean, do you see any flaws in my fights?
Oh, bro, no. I like your style. Look, I told you, man. When I saw you fight at the Harbor, man, I was impressed, thoroughly impressed. And I'm not an easy dude to impress when it comes to boxing, man. You totally impressed me.
Oh, so and that's just from outside looking in, point of view.
Yeah,
you know, and my response as a fighter, like I'm saying, my opponent, I believe that's all he could do is bring his physical best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's short, he's strong. He better have gas in his gas tank, and that's about it.
So
and he better hope I got a home day, some stuff like that. What's the odds?
So that's some real stuff right there. So how is camp going on for you? How's camp going for you?
Camp is going. You know, we try to juggle a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the fans, you know, and extended loved ones, they don't get the insight of the life that goes on behind the scenes. You know, we're using this as a platform. When I say this, the boxing,
mm-hmm.
we're using this as a platform to open the eyes to the ones that are stagnant, not just in their personal lives, but just in life, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that becomes a cancer because one that don't understand feels to teach like something that's not understood. You know, they teach the same thing. It's a repetitious thing.
Mm-hmm.
They teach repetition. And if you don't understand, you're stagnant. Somebody else sees, they just going to get caught up in doing the same thing you do. They're going to be stagnant too, mm-hmm. down the road.
Yeah.
Or facing some type of trial or tribulation.
No doubt.
But it's growing is what I'm saying. We're using this as a platform to open up the eyes. You know, we're juggling. Camp is camp. It's hot, sweaty, hot. We can yield that. If we get something wrong, we can tweak it. We get it right. It's stress. You know, but then we got the family. We got a lot of nieces and nephews.
You know, you're blessed. Mm-hmm.
And then we're still young men,
mm-hmm.
young kings, you know, so we enjoy the fruits of life. So we try to make time for our personal needs and wants, but we can't because we got priorities. And on top of that, we see people that need help that are staying.
Yeah.
And they are our own people.
Yeah.
They're probably not mother and father or my brother, blood related, but they are people.
Yeah.
And it still become cancerous when other people see that.
See, that's what I'm talking about, man. That's what I'm talking about. See, that's what I'm talking about, man. The knowledge you spit out, man, at this age, at your age, it's amazing, man. Real talk.
So when we in camp, yeah, we working hard, critiquing everything that we need to critique. You know, but the frustration don't come from camp. The frustration comes from everything. And it's been locked in on our mind. It's been kept on our mind, like on our conscience. So it's like almost juggling everything
mm-hmm.
while we're in camp. But we good. We good. Because when we step into school, we bring in all the loved ones, love, and all our personal ones, you know, our immediate ones, love, and they're with us. And we use that to fuel us.
Mm-hmm. So you listen to Urban Sports Scene right now. We have super lightweight Gary Antoine Russell on the line. So Gary Antoine, within ESPN's Dan Raphael, he has a little ranking of the 2019 prospects of the year. You ranked ninth. Welterweight Virgil Ortiz Jr. received the honor of prospect of the year. Your thoughts?
My personal thoughts.
Yeah.
I'm I'm shocked and thrilled and honored, you know, because it makes me look at things from another perspective and let me add things onto the wagon on my to-do list. Now that I got prospect of the year, I got to go higher than that. Now people got to see me. Now people really got to understand me. Things like that. My personal goals. I would set little personal goals like that. But honestly, in all opinions, I knew it was going to be there anyway. That's what I am anyway. Whether they voted to me, mandated to me, or nominated it to me, it doesn't matter to me. I know what's in my stew.
Yeah. I mean, again, you're like one of the more talented, you're one of the more talented young dudes in the game right now, hands down. So personally, what are your goals for 2020?
My goals for 2020? I still got goals from 2019, you know? And these goals for 2019 wasn't just no temporary goals.
Gotcha.
So the whole New Year, New Me thing, I think that's just a tradition saying.
Of course, that is. It's so true, man. It's so true.
I believe I'm going to get closer to the goal that I already set. And hold myself accountable to.
Yeah, exactly.
And get closer than I got last year, you know.
I hate the new me thing too. I hate it with a passion. Hey, Gary Antoine, thanks for being on, my man. Before I let you go, do you have anything you want to add?
Prepare yourself for the worst, hope for the best. That's immediate loved ones and extended loved ones. Because the way this whole government stuff going and politics stuff going, there will be a war.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
Protection is real. You know, I love my brothers. I love my nieces. I'll protect them accordingly to the situation.
Of course.
Whether I know you or don't know you, if you my kind, you share my skin color or my DNA in some shape or form, I'm gonna share that same type of protection of love. So I'm gonna warn you. I'm going to get you aware. I'm not just going to leave you in the blind. Everybody that follow me, follow my family, that genuinely care for me, care for my family, what I do, protect yourselves, prepare for the worst, hope for the best, and keep it moving.
My man. Hey, Gary Antoine, I appreciate you being on, my man. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you too, my king.
All right, man. Stay blessed, all right?
Yeah.
Big things happen for you in 2020. I claim it for you, bro.
I claimed it too. I got another one.
There you go, bro. There you go. All right. Stay blessed. That is super lightweight Gary Antoine Russell. Hey, I want to say soon to be champ, man, because dude won't be a champ. Soon to be champ, man, because dude, he's a cool dude, man. Cool brother, man. We're about to go to break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Site for Aitja Shittig. Doses.
If you wanted to, these expensive, these is red bottoms, these is bloody shoes. Hit the school, I can get them both, I don't wanna choose. And I'm quick, cutting off, so don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now, I make money move. Say, I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now, speak, that means I don't fuck with you. I'm a boss, you a worker, bitch, I make bloody moves. Now she say, she gon' do what or who? Let's find out and see. Cardi B, you know where I'm at, you know where I be. You in the club, just to party, I'm there, I get paid a fee. I be in and out them banks so much, I know they tired of me. Honestly, don't give a f*** about who in front of me. Drop 2 mixtapes in 6 months, we're breaking as hard as me. I don't bother with these, don't let these bother me. They see pictures, they say goals, bitch, I'm who they trying to be. Look, I might just chill on some babes, I might just chill with your boo, I might just spill on your babe. My f*** feel like a lake, he
wanna swim with his face. I'm like, okay, okay. I let him get what he want. He buy me Yves Saint Laurent and the new whip. When I go back as a horse, I got the trunk in the front. I'm the hottest in the street. No, you probably heard of me. Got a bag and fix my teeth. Hope you know it ain't cheap. And I pay my mama bills. I ain't got no time to chill. Think these six be mad at me. They baby father run a bill. They low. You can f*** with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red bottoms. These is bloody shoes. Hit the school, I can get them both. I don't wanna choose. And I'm quick, cutting off, so don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now, I make money move. Say I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now, speak, that means I don't f*** with you. I'm a boss, you a worker, worker, bitch, I make bloody move. If you a booty, you get popped. You a goofy, you a op. Don't you come around my way. You can't hang around my block. And I just check my account, turns out I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich. I put my hand above my hip, I bet you dip, she dip, she dip. I say, I get the money and go. This is high like a stove. My glitter is gold. So that little bitch say her roll. I just a rover, no rolls. I just came up in a rave. I need to fill up the tank. No, I need to fill up the safe. I need to let all these know they none of them none of the safe. I go to dinner and steak. Only the real can relate. I used to live in the peace. Now it's a crib with a gay. Rolly got charms. The life was the place. Hard to let these know. Just in case these forgot. I just wanna check the mail. Another check from all the stock. They low. You can f*** with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red bottoms, these is blood.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Myself, Wole, Will T, is Lil Lay, Ray Jeezy is out, man. That was a great interview with Gary Russell Jr. and Gary Antoine Russell. Just to make sure we all are down to know who Gary is fighting. Gary is fighting King Tut. That's his nickname. That is, like Gary said, the mandatory dude that he has to fight. February 8th. I would say his full name. It's actually something I cannot say. It's Tugot. I can't even say it. I won't even fake it. But you forget. That's a little bit too much for me. But Gary Antoine Russell is fighting Jose Marufo. And I can say that. That's easier for me to say. And but again, you heard a lot, man, with when it comes to Gary. First, Gary, in terms of Santa Cruz, that's a fight that he said it could happen. It could go down. He can possibly fight Santa Cruz if everything lines up. Will T is in the building. What's up, Will T? But you can't see, they can't hear you right now, but you missed both interviews. It's all good. Don't worry about it, bro. Oh, okay. Yeah, it was a little quick, but don't worry about it. I'm recapping it so we can just kind of shoot the breeze and talk because the segment has ended a little earlier than I thought it would. But yeah, Gary did say that, you know, he wants to fight Santa Cruz. He said that after this fight, he would, you know, he expects to have that contract signed with Santa Cruz.
Okay, that's good. I mean, it's encouraging that he's fighting so early in the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, historically over the past 2 or 3 years, when he's only fought once a year, you mm-hmm. know, it's usually around May,
yeah.
June. So, you know, sometimes it's been earlier in the year. Like, I think like March or April.
Yeah,
or two.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's starting out fighting in February.
He's like spring, summertime, like you're.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, he's fighting in February. So, you know, hopefully that leads to opportunity for him to fight 2, maybe 3 times this year.
Yeah, but definitely. And he talked about, obviously, Tank. A lot of people want to see him fight Tank. Gary was talking about how you could tell, like, Gary was, he was energetic about it. He was talking about how it's funny how, you know, Tank said that that's the fight that he doesn't need to fight Gary, and Mayweather jumped in and said that, hey, you know, Gary is a challenging, would be a good opponent. This is, I'm paraphrasing. He said Mayweather said that he would be a good opponent, but, you know, have Gary win a title, and then maybe, you know, he can fight Tank.
I mean, that sounds like hogwash to me.
Yeah.
Because this is the, Floyd Mayweather is the exact same man who said belts don't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I understand that, you know, from a, look, I think Gary already has a great fan base, and he's recognized throughout boxing as having some of the fastest hands in the game. But when it comes to, you know, that larger exposure, some people can make the case that he doesn't, you know, He doesn't have that name.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, with him headlining the his fight February 8th in Allentown, Pennsylvania, you know, on Showtime, that's definitely going to give him some exposure to a lot of to a lot of fans and people just in general who aren't who may not be as familiar with him and his work.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll see, and time will tell. But I you could tell that he definitely wants the Santa Cruz fight, and he was talking about moving up. Yeah, I think that that's definitely coming down the road, and him moving up. Since everybody else seems to be moving up to run away.
Yeah, it seems like it.
I'm just being honest. It seems like it.
Yeah, look, you know, some people say run away. Some people say make business decision. You know, tomato, tomato.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because we all talk about it. Having Gary Russell Jr. take on Tank would be big for the area. It would be like a Vegas style fight in the area.
It would be big for this area, for Washington D.C. and Baltimore specifically. Mm-hmm. But for the sport of boxing, you know, just is it the type of fight that's going to attract the casual fan? Probably not. But I do think if Gary, you know, when Gary fights, you know, February 8th, and he gets a victory then, and if he's able to get Leo Santa Cruz in the ring, and he's able to get a victory then.
That's big.
That's huge. It's nothing Tank Davis, Floyd Mayweather, or Leonard Ellerby could ever say that, you know, you don't have the recognition or the names, you know, and on your record.
Yeah, but does Tank even have that? You know what I mean?
I wouldn't think so, but I wouldn't say so. But you know, people will make I'm not gonna say excuse. People are justified by saying he's been a champion at two different weight classes. You know, so
yeah, they'll use that clout and that pull. I spoke to Gary Antoine Russell too, and he, you know, it's funny on ESPN. ESPN's Dan Raphael has him ranked in terms of prospect of the year 2019, ninth. You know what I mean? And there's Virgil Ortiz Jr. was ranked number one as prospect of the year.
Oh.
Yeah. Ninth, though. That's pretty low.
But
you think it's low? Out of all the prospects?
Yeah, I mean, Gary Antoine started out, you know, with his style of fighting has been exciting.
It is, yes. You know, all knockouts.
Through the early part of his career.
Still, it's 12 and 12.
12 knockouts.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I see you're right. It's pretty low. You're right, though.
I mean, it's pretty low. You know, compared to some of the other opponents that some of the other prospects have. But
yeah, you know.
But when it comes to those lists, it's all about. I'm not going to say it's all about media exposure and, you know, promotion and things of that nature, but it definitely does play a role.
That subjectivity, all of it. It's all subjective. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, I told him, like, you know, we've seen him, like, dude has skills. You know what I mean? Like, he has potential to be big time. Let's go off the whole Team Gary Russell thing. Let's talk a little bit still on boxing. What's the last fight? I'm trying to think of the last fight. That we haven't talked about prior to this show.
That we haven't talked about?
I'm trying to think. We talked about. Oh, but Tank, we didn't talk about Tank Gamboa.
Yeah, we could talk about Tank Gamboa.
Tank Gamboa. So, I actually got a lot about Tank Gamboa. And we can talk about Terrence. So, all right. So, first off, were you impressed with what Tank did to Gamboa?
Not necessarily.
Me either. Okay.
and here's why. Like, once upon a time, Uriokis Gamboa was
highly
thought of. He's still respected. You know, highly skilled, highly thought of boxer, right?
Mm-hmm.
At this point in his career, I don't want to call him. He's a little shell shocked, right?
Yeah.
He goes down a little bit easier now, opposed to previously at previous points in his career, and then also he's had some issues with weight, you know, making weight at certain fights. So Uriokis Gamboa, while he's a name, right, that's to me at this point in his career, that's all he is a name that's on Gervonta Davis's resume at this point, you know, and you know, we all know how boxing works.
Yeah.
You get those names on your resume that builds up, you know,
without
your cachet.
Context.
Yeah.
Without context.
Without context. It builds up your cachet and makes you form a popular boxer,
mm-hmm.
right? Gets your brand out there and gets your name recognition out there.
Yeah, I wasn't impressed. I mean, and he had, you know, he dealt with an Achilles injury throughout that fight. He couldn't knock. I mean, you would think he would have knocked him out earlier. It just, to me, when I look at against Gamboa, just doesn't have that desire anymore. It is what it is. Like he used to have. I mean, he's still skilled though, right? We all know that he's skilled. He's a skilled boxer. You can't take that away from him.
Uh-huh.
But when it comes to, you know, fighting a high prospect or, you know, somebody talented, super talented, he's just not that guy anymore. And it is what it is. We saw it against Terrence Bud Crawford years ago. He started off that fight pretty good against Bud, but then Bud switched to southpaw and it was a wrap. But when you look at that fight, I mean, he got tired at the end, and he was getting tired too. Tank was getting tired towards, like, I want to say the seventh, eighth round. It was just, I just wasn't impressed for a guy that this is supposed to be a coming out party.
Agreed. You know, because all of the, you know, elements was there. You know, he was in Atlanta, headlining the fight. This was supposed to be one of those fights against a guy with that name recognition that he was supposed to look great against.
Yeah.
But he just didn't, you know. So
George tweeted out the word Urban Sports Scene, the word you were looking for to describe Gamboa is old. That's what Gamboa is now.
I mean, shell shock, old, you know.
I mean, I'm trying to find a nice way to say it.
I'm trying not to, you
like,
know.
Say he's done. I don't want to say he's done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't want to say that about him.
George also tweeted, only heard part of the Gary Russell Jr. interview, Urban Sports Scene, but the parts I heard, oh my, there wasn't one bit of backup from him. wish we could make a fight between him and Davis happen. Yeah, he was cussing like crazy. you would have been proud, Will.
I mean, that's what it is, man. Listen, if you're passionate about something, you know, don't
real talk.
Around the bush. Just
real
say
talk.
How you feel.
Oh no, Ray texted me about that too. Ray's like, damn. Gary stayed cussing. But he was passionate, dog. He was real passionate. But yeah, man. But so what do you think's next for Tank?
Because
I heard somebody say Santa Cruz and Tank. Think that's going
to
happen.
I mean, Santa Cruz did move up to lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they both are under the PBC umbrella. If you Leo Santa Cruz and you're looking at, you know, risk versus reward, right? You versus Gary Russell Jr., to boxing fans,
it's a big fight, right? Yeah.
But you versus Tank
Davis, it's
a money fight. It's a, you know, it's a little bit more notoriety,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Just because of, you know, the hype around Tank and also the level of activity he's had over the past couple of years.
That's true. I mean, he's a knockout machine. He shows power. And, you know, anytime if you're Santa Cruz, you can just kind of dabble into that pot. That's an explosive thing that can happen in terms of getting notoriety and money.
Yeah.
Let's just be real.
Yeah.
It's funny, you know, on social media. I know you're not on social media, but Terrence Bud Crawford, he called out. This is what is hilarious to me. He called out Tank and it was like, you fought Gamboa. Like, you ain't really fight anybody. Right. That's what I'm paraphrasing. This is pretty much what it was.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking to myself, like, so you're going to say he ain't fighting anybody? Like, this is the route. This is what we're doing now.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not, you know, Terrence Crawford. He does have some names on his resume. Amir Khan.
Yeah,
is one of
Gamboa.
Them. Gamboa is another one. Jeff Horn, who beat Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah,
is another one. But I'm just going to be honest.
He's Rigondeaux.
I don't believe so.
Okay, I thought he did. Okay.
The whole, you know, this goes into a larger subject.
Go ahead, bro.
Just,
we got time to kill.
No, the business of boxing is killing the popularity of it,
mm-hmm.
and is killing, you know, the fandom of it, because
yeah.
it's like, you know, little like clicks, and you know, you got Top Rank,
PBC
Top Rank, you have Match Room.
Yeah.
You know, there used to be a day where, you know, fans of boxing could see three or four star fighters on one card. Yeah. You know, back when Don King used to promote. Now I will note that you know, Don King is known for not doing the best business with,
yeah, exactly,
with boxers. But
he gave you a great card, though.
He gave the fans a great card.
Yeah, he gave you a great card.
You know, so I don't know, you know, I don't know too, I'm not going to say I know everything about boxing or the business or the economics of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, as guys use the excuse of, I'm aligned to such and such network, or I'm aligned to such and such promoter, to
not fight somebody.
To not fight, or to avoid fighting.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
You're doing yourself a disservice, you know. And if you're afraid of, you know, I know that boxers go in the ring and they put their lives on the line.
Yeah.
Every fight, every time you step into the ring, it could possibly be your last fight. But if you want to build that, you know, guys say they want to be legends. They want to be legendary fighters, and they want to make as much money as possible. All you have to do is just look at a guy who had a number of losses, and some people do consider him a legend. That's Oscar De La Hoya.
Oscar
De La Hoya fought
everybody. No, he's a legend.
And he was the golden boy. That's why he made the that's why he made the amount of money he did make, because he fought everyone, and he didn't allow the excuse of, not excuse, but he didn't allow a reason of such and such deals with XYZ promoter to stop him from potentially any fight.
Mm-hmm. No. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm with you. That, and George, he tweeted, Will T, the business of boxing is killing the fandom of boxing. Sadly, that has been true since the 1990s.
It has, you know. You know, promoters, that there's been, you know, the history of boxing is right with situations where promoters wouldn't, you know, co-promote a card with another promoter just for a multitude of reasons. But what boxers need to understand is, you know, the promoter works for you. Even though you signed a contract to that promoter, that promoter essentially works for you, and you need to tell him, this is the fight I want.
I agree. It even came out that it was reported that Terrence Crawford, they pretty much threw out Sean Porter for Terrence Crawford. And Terrence Crawford said, like, I ain't trying to fight Sean Porter. I got bigger opponents to fight.
I mean, look, if that's what you, if you say you want the best at 147, Sean Porter definitely is. He's not, you know.
He's not Earl.
He's not, you know, he's not Earl Spence. You know, Sean Porter's also lost to Keith Thurman. But he's one of the elite fighters in, you know, 147. So if the opportunity to fight him was presented to you, and you say that you are the best at 147,
why not
take it?
And he was competitive against a guy that some people think is the best boxer in the world too. I mean, in Errol Spence, not all, but, you know, he's some people, one of the best boxers.
You know, I just get tired of the semantics, man. Yeah. Let's just make a fight happen.
Yeah, and to me, and if you want, even in the business side of things, right? For Terrence Bud Crawford, let's keep it a buck. If you beat Sean Porter, because at the end of the day, people look at Sean Porter, but what he did with Earl Spence, and you're Terrence Bud Crawford, the boxer, and then people think that you're one of the best boxers, you know, in the game, arguably the best boxer in the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
You beat Porter, you grow to another level. You know what I mean? Like, level.
You're better
off than when you fighting, say, who he fought last, you know, on the last card. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you only make the case for, hey,
I'm ready.
Errol Spence, I'm here. I'm ready for you.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's my thing, like, because we're looking at even the business side. Because it's all about bargaining chips, right? Let's just keep it a buck, right? That's what it is, bargaining, right? You beat Porter, your chips look a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
They do. They look better. You can say now, I want this number for yourself, right? I want this number.
Yeah.
But by you saying you don't want to fight him, then who are you? Who do you have is better than Porter on your side? Let's just be real. On your side,
yeah.
That can make you that can get you that bread to so Earl Spence can say, you know what? Yeah, let's get him more in the middle, right? Let's get him more in the middle. You don't have anybody on your side to compete with that.
No, you don't. I mean, if you think about, if we just looking at it unbiasedly, you're going to have, when the fight is made, you know, the case could definitely be made that Errol Spence is or should get a little bit more than Terrence Crawford.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
You know, if he continues to, you know, if he
comes gets, back from the crash.
Yeah, because he's going to have a win against Errol Spence is going to have a win against Mikey Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have the win against Sean Porter. It's reported that, you know, when he comes back from the crash, he probably is going to fight Danny Garcia next.
And even, what's his name? The dude he fought before. Oh, my God. Shoot, the boxer. Brooke.
Kell
Brook.
Kell Brook, yeah.
It'd be Kell Brook. That's not, Kell Brook ain't no bum.
So, I mean, he's definitely going to make the case that, look, you know, you might fight on the bigger platform, which is ESPN, but I'm the more renowned and better and bigger fighter, the bigger draw, the A side of this card.
Yeah. And truth be told, in terms of boxing, PBC seems like it's the bigger draw to me as a fan. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't, and see if you agree with me or not, I would pay to watch Charlo Harrison 3 before I pay to watch Bud on anybody on Top Rank fight, pay-per-view wise.
But
in another welterweight.
But in another welterweight on Top Rank.
Yeah.
Well,
and Charlo Harrison.
Yeah, I would pay to watch Charlo Harrison.
Over, right?
Yeah, I mean, because it would need a strong undercard, though, right?
Yeah. But would need a strong undercard.
Bud would need a strong undercard too, but.
You know what I mean? So, and we're talking about a guy that people arguably pound for pound the best boxer in the game. Arguably. I'm not saying he is, but arguably. You know what I mean? So it says a lot. All right. It's a new era for the Redskins. Ron Rivera is the new head coach. Donna Hopkins from Pro Football Plus will join the show after the break. You're listening to Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, and Will T. Ray Jeezy is out. Right now, I have one of my favorite folks. I have Donna Hopkins Redskins reporter from Tony McGee's Pro Football Plus on the line. What's going on, Donna?
Hey, it's good. How you doing today?
Doing good, Donna. It's a lot going on. A lot of things popping. I haven't talked to you about this. We talked about this last week, Ray and I. Ron Rivera is now the head coach of the Washington Redskins. Did you like the hire? Or do you like the hire?
I actually do like the hire. Mm-hmm. I think they got a seasoned guy that is a winner that's coming in here. He said a lot of great things at the press conference that I was at. And the thing about it is it still has to materialize on the football field, because you can say a lot, but he has credentials that he comes with as a coach and as a player. He won on the coach's end and he won on the player's end in Chicago, where he won the Super Bowl his second year there. So he's done some great things in Carolina for the 9 years he was there. Last probably a few years and whatever, not so much, but I still like what he's bringing. You know, a lot of things that he said, but one thing that stuck out to me is discipline. He's bringing discipline to an undisciplined organization.
Hey, Donna, how you doing? This is Will. Happy New Year.
Hey, Will. Happy New Year.
Let me ask you this. Word is starting to leak about some of the hires that Ron Rivera is making for bringing to Washington. And it seems as if that he's bringing along a lot of the coaches that he had in Carolina. From your perspective, do you think it's a great idea for a guy like Ron Rivera, who's had some success but hasn't been overall successful as a coach, to still bring that same staff from Carolina and bring them to Washington? Or should he look for new blood?
I think, you know, I'm not disappointed with him bringing his own people, because he's coming into an organization that hasn't won in years. So he's bringing in some people that he's comfortable with. And I mean, a lot of coaches do that. When you look around the league, when new coaches come in from another team, they bring a lot of their staff from the previous team that they were with because they were comfortable. I don't have a problem him bringing those people if they are quality people that can make a team better, as far as the offensive coordinator that is really good and innovative. Same thing with the defensive coordinator and all the other position coaches. I thought the Redskins had some good people still here. I wasn't totally so 100% on Kevin O'Connell, but I wasn't against him either, because I think down the stretch he did some good things. Ike, the wide receiver coach, I like the things about him. Yeah, but the thing, too, is when you're trying to build a team and everything, and sometimes people that's under their old regime of how they used to do things, and they still have that mentality of that organization where they've been, sometimes it's good to clean house. I would have liked for him to mix it up a little bit with the staff that he had there in Carolina, and maybe mix it up with some of the other talent that's across the league in some of those other positions. But I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, even though, you know, he's had some success. And that's a good thing, where the Redskins have had no success lately. So I'd rather have some versus zero. But I do like the fact that, you know, he's comfortable bringing those people, and some of them have good credentials that he's bringing. I'm not sold on Turner as the offensive coordinator, but I mean, he had a staff that was hurt, you know, most of the time, but good offensive coordinators are able to work with what they've got, but they were kind of like without their main quarterback and some other key positions. But so I'm not totally against him. I wanted, because he has to come here immediately, because he said he doesn't want his 5 years to take 5 years and turning this team around. He wants to be able to turn this team around somewhat quickly. Quickly may not be, but, you know, for 2 years. But doesn't mean that the people he's bringing here, that he's going to keep here forever. If they don't work out, maybe he'll get rid of them.
Well, I have a follow-up question for you, Donna. One of the first comments you made about Ron Rivera was he's a disciplinarian, right? Seems, just taking the pulse of the city, you know, pulse of some of the fan base, is the fan base seems comfortable with is happy with him because he's a disciplinarian, right? So if he instills a far more disciplined regime here in D.C. and the team still goes 6-10 next year, do you think that is the foundation for success long term for this team?
I'm not, you know what? I think they have pieces in place, and now that they have a coach that, to me, is a seasoned coach that can bring winning here, I'm not for sure if it's going to be a team that, if he gets the right quarterback, because Haskins, he hasn't named him as the starting quarterback yet. And I think that it starts all there on that side of the ball a lot, is that that offense has to be able to go, your quarterback has to be able to be, you know, move forward and not in a slow pace. And I know that it's just going to be his second season, and it's half of a season because he didn't play much of this season. I think I'm not even looking. No, six is not successful to me because that's just three more than what you had this year. So for it to be successful next year, if you go eight games, at least eight, that's an improvement because you're moving forward, because there's still a lot of pieces that have to be put in place here, because I think the wide receivers are good. Running back position is good. As far as the offensive line, I think that you need to work on that area in the draft and free agency, because you've got four linemen that possibly will be gone. Flowers, and then you don't know if Scherf's going to come back. Trent Williams, they're talking to him, but I don't even know if you want to bring him back because of his situation. Health-wise, you don't really know what you got there. And then they're talking about Alex Smith maybe giving him the opportunity. If I was him, I would have walked away, because after that injury, I would have been saying, you know, I'm good, because you don't know what you got in him. You know he's going to be slower. His mobility is going to not be the same as it was before. And you need a mobile, somewhat of a mobile quarterback. So I really think that it's a big question mark still at the quarterback position, because it's uncertain as far as maybe, you know, Colt McCoy and Case Keenan may not be back here next year. So who are your backups going to be? But who is your starter is going to be? On the defensive side of the ball, I think that they're somewhat set because, you know, they end up drafting Chase Young and then the other guys up front in that 4-3 defense. And then, you know, maybe get another linebacker, safety in a corner. Those are the areas that you need on defense. So they're not far away. I just thought that they had bad coaching for the last 5 years. I think that, you know, with Gruden gone and then, you know, Callahan. But I just think that Callahan. No, not that I hate him. I just thought that he wasn't a good coach. I mean, just like Norm Turner, I don't think he's a head coach, but I think he's a good offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I know.
Some people are not head coaches.
Yeah.
And you could tell that this whole team was undisciplined under Gruden. Yeah. I mean, they were just like running rapid, you know. And I think that with Callahan, he did the best that he could under the circumstances, because in the time frame that he took over the team, they were much more disciplined. He changed a lot of things pertaining to practices and some of the bad habits that they had, you know, during the Jay Gruden era. So, I know I threw that out there.
Right? I know you did.
But you know what? But it is, the proof is in the pudding, right?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, so,
I'm with you.
I think that, so that's the reason why I don't think that they're far, far off, but I'm not going to say, hey, man, they're going to win the Super Bowl next year, whatever, because you know that I think he's a better coach than they've had here in a long time, but it does not matter if you don't get W's, and that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I'm right. You're right about that, Donna. You're listening to the Urban Sports Team right now. We have Donna Hopkins, Redskin reporter for Tony McGee's Pro Football Plus. So, Donna, you mentioned the 4-3. You know, you mentioned a lot of defensive parts. Imagine you ain't throw my man. I mean, Fabian Monroe, he was balling last year. I'm not mad at you. Former, so
The Skins hired Jack Del Rio to
be defensive. But why I like him when okay. they finally moved him into his true position.
Exactly. I wanted to make sure that was out there, because at cornerback, you know, if you got Fabian and Dunbar, you should be all right, right? You should be sweet.
No, you're not. because you know injuries come. Dunbar has been hurt some.
I know, all the time.
Been hurt some, mm-hmm. And you still need to me. Neither one of them are locked down corners.
Mm.
They're good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're improved, because when Fabian wasn't in his true position,
yeah.
he struggled.
Yeah, sure.
And as soon as they put him in his true position, you could see, oh, wow, what a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dunbar is just improving each year. I like him. I like his mentality as far as winning and losing and all those kind of things. Because, you know, talking to him throughout the course of the season, you see where his head was. So I like those two, but you need more than Jimmy Monroe. I mean, he's going to be better this year, but you still need, to me, another corner. You still need another safety and definitely another linebacker.
So do you think this team has the necessary pieces to make a 4-3 work?
Well, the thing about up front in the 4-3, because I think that to me you're able to put more pressure. Now, the thing about it is it'll fall somewhat in the linebacker position, so you definitely have to have linebackers because you got to have pass rushers on the edge to make a 4-3 work. Now, this is a thing that you've got. You've got Jonathan Allen, which he'll be more freer now in a 4-3 because he was getting double-teamed. You got Payne. You got Ionitis. But if you got those three guys, and then you got Sweat, which I think he'll be much better in a 4-3 than a 3-4,
mm-hmm.
Because their hands will be down in the dirt. And then if you got a Chase Young versus a Kerrigan under, but one of those guys is going to be out because you got the 4-3. But, you know, I was talking to Tony McGee, who I do the show with, and he said that sometimes they play five linemen, you know, to switch it up a little bit,
yeah.
to throw
mm-hmm.
people off.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to be savvy in that defense. That's where the defensive coordinator comes in as far as how good he is in doing things. Now, one thing about Jack Del Rio is that he likes to put a lot of pressure. I mean, I would have liked to see Greg Williams back, but I really like Greg Williams.
Everybody loves Greg.
Yeah, because you know what you get there and all that. But I think that they have to get some, because London Collins should be better in a 4-3 because he can play his true position, and his skill set will show more in a 4-3 versus a 3-4. But I think that you almost got to wait and see as far as how he's going to run that 4-3
mm-hmm.
and if it's going to be five guys up front, because if it's four guys up front, who are those guys that I just mentioned is going to be out of the loop?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're only going to get better, but you definitely got to have strong pass rushes. Because if you don't have the strong pass rushes on the outside, then everything else falls apart.
Can I be non-PC, yeah. Donna, real quick? Because you mentioned Ryan Kerrigan, you said Chase Young. I'm being non-PC. Like, Chase Young should be on the field, and Ryan Kerrigan should be out. It should always be Chase Young. It should be Chase Young and Montez Sweat. I know everybody loves Kerrigan. He's a nice guy. But when you're looking at, you know, Chase Young and that ability in terms of how to rush the passer with that speed on the outside combined with, you know, Montez Sweat that we saw against the Cowboys. He looked good against the Cowboys. Oh, like, he looked
– But Kerrigan, like you said, is not good against the run.
Yeah, he's not good against the run, yeah.
Yeah, so you lose out right there.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have somebody that's good against the run and the pass.
Yeah.
But the only thing that they said about Chase Young is that we were talking about this
mm-hmm.
on the show last night, is the only thing about the negative about him is he only has one move, and that's that bull rush.
Yeah.
So, you know, as a defensive end, you've got to be really good to be the Dexter Manleys, the Charles Manns, the Tony McGees, and all of those guys that were great pass rushers. You've got to have more than one move. Because you know how it is, you know, with the offensive linemen and those people. If you don't have more than one move, you got to have a spin move. You got to have another move. And I told Tony, well, maybe that's something that he will learn as he gets into the NFL, where, you know, people on the next level start working with him
Definitely.
With some of these other moves.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of these.
But he's still strong. You can teach strength though, because he's strong.
Yeah, and a lot of these cats, to be honest with you, these young pass rushers, don't mean they come in the league with one move. You know, they don't come in with multiple moves. Like for instance, you look at Bosa. You know, obviously, I mean, they're great pass rushers. But when you rank their prospects in terms of how what Chase Young is, a lot of them great. A lot of scouts rate Chase Young better than Bosa, and Bosa is all world for the one in San Francisco. He's all world. So and also, I mean, when you look at Jonathan Allen, De'Ron Payne, yeah, they're going to make life easy for Chase Young. He may not need to have multiple moves because those two guys are and Ioannidis. I will never forget Ioannidis. Those guys are occupying so much, you know, so much occupying linemen, that Chase Young can work one-on-one. And Chase Young one-on-one against some of the right tackles or left tackles is a problem. It's a serious problem.
Yeah. And you know what? In a 4-3, you're not going to be able to double-team those guys, yeah, because Allen was double team a lot. Ioannidis was double team a lot. Ioannidis, remember when he was out last year for injury and, yeah, and it showed on that defensive line?
Mm-hmm.
When he came back this year, you could tell the difference in him. He was our MVP on the defense this year, Ioannidis, because we thought that he played solid for the most part of the season. Nobody played great because great means that you got W.
Yeah, no one played great. Exactly. They played
Tell you, one person did. The
Who
guy was making the Pro Bowl, and that's a Tressway.
Tressway, definitely.
He was the only one that you can say was flat down, solid the whole year.
Yeah, that's the only one, a punter. Like a punter.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Hey, you know what? He gave them good field position because the special teams were much better this year than last year. And I think that they're keeping the special teams coach.
Yeah, they are. They're keeping him. They are keeping the special
teams. So they didn't get rid of everybody because I think Randy Jackson, they're keeping him, the running back coach.
Yeah.
They should have got rid of the head trainer and all those guys, those. But they are keeping some pieces of the team together. So you don't have just everybody that's coming from Carolina. But like I said, again, you got 5 years to turn a team around. You don't have time to waste making mistakes, bringing other people, hoping that they'll work out. He knows what he's got in the coaching staff down there. Now, I don't know why the coaching staff down there didn't work out the last, they went to the Super Bowl in 2015 with a record of 15-1. I don't know after that why they fell apart, but you can see some pieces of the team where Cam Newton was injured a lot or whatever, and somebody threw this out. They said, will Cam Newton be coming to Washington?
I ain't coming to Washington, man. Cam ain't coming
to D.C. I told somebody, I said, we don't want him.
I like Cam, but he ain't coming to D.C. I like Cam, but he ain't coming to D.C. He's not.
No.
He's not coming to D.C.
But you know what? You never say never.
I mean, it's not that I'm not going to do that.
Is he under contract?
I mean, he's still under contract. He's under contract, but he's not going to be in Carolina. But he's not coming to D.C. He's not coming to D.C. I know a lot of people were thinking that with Rivera, and I doubt it. That's a whole different circus that I don't think this town needs right now. And I like Cam.
Well, let me just say this. They're trying to build a team, and they don't need no distractions or no problem. You know, Cam comes with a whole bunch of, you know, everything.
Yeah, and even at that, what that does to – I mean, Dwayne is nobody. He's a rookie, you know what I mean, at this point in time. So he hasn't really earned his bones right now. But at the same time, that just adds a whole nother – boat of controversy. You know what I'm saying? They don't even need that.
Yeah.
They don't need that. Say, Donna, so
they don't need no extra drama.
No, they need no extra drama. So, George, one of our listeners, George, tweeted, I've enjoyed Donna Hopkins' appearance on Urban Sports Scene, but she's really hit the bullseye talking about one of my biggest question marks with Chase Young. He's only got one move, and that doesn't last forever.
No, not at all. And that's the downside that people are looking at. The thing about people that's coming out of college and whatever, they don't have to have more than one move, you know, in the college ranks.
Yeah.
But you do have some people that have more. But I think that a lot of the people who come into the NFL, they end up working with the defensive coordinators, defensive coaches, that they learn how to do some of the different moves. Because let me tell you, when you come in as a rookie, some of them veterans out there that you're going to go up against, they're going to make you look crazy. Because they're going to say, oh, we know which way you're coming. You just got one move.
Yeah.
So And I don't know if the Redskins are going to take Chase Young. They may go down in the draft to get more picks and whatever. I would not give him up. But it's other people. You don't particularly want them to pick him, do you?
I want Judy. Everybody know who I want.
And who was that, B?
The wide receiver from Alabama. Everybody know who I want. I make that perfectly clear every time I'm at the Skins games. I make it perfectly clear. I want Judy from Alabama, but I understand where people are coming from. They want Chase Young. They want the pass rusher. I'm cool. If you're going 4-3, I'm okay with getting Ryan Kerrigan in another year. I think Ryan Kerrigan, to us, I'll say it, is overrated, but I can deal with Ryan Kerrigan for another year. I mean, getting 10 plus sacks isn't easy at all, and he does it. And I think Montez Sweat will ball out to a point where he can have a dominant season. You give the Skins Judy and McLaurin on the outside. Oh, that's a problem. That's a serious problem.
But you know what? I'm all right with what the receivers they got right now, because I think they stepped up. And you know what? What I like about the young receivers versus the veterans that they pushed on out is because of their production. Because Sam Sims at the end of the season and everything, I talked to him and at the last game in Dallas, and I was asking him about the season and looking forward to this season. You know what I liked about him?
What's up?
He said that we can't get comfortable with what we did this year. He said, because everybody is going to map us out what we did. He said, but we have to step it up to the next level for next year because people are going to be gunning. That's what you want to hear in a rookie in moving to the next year. Is I'm not satisfied with what I did this year. I want to get better because, you know, I want to go to the next level of my game and everything. And you should want to get better each year and not be satisfied where you're at. Because I think that, some veterans got comfortable here. Some coaches got comfortable here, not just here, but in some of the other organizations. I mean, you know, Dallas got their new coach. McCartney, they had said about him in Green Bay, that he became too comfortable there, you know, after, you know, the success he had there, that after a while him and Aaron Rodgers and, you know, that relationship started to sour and they did not get better because I think he became complacent. So I just think that as an organization, as coaches and everything, that you cannot, you know, become so comfortable. But like I said, we'll see about the offensive line. I mean, not the offensive coordinator, because I still have a big question mark there, because I still don't think we may get the right person. But, you know, Norv Turner was an excellent offensive coordinator. Hopefully his son is.
Hey, Don, I could talk football with you all day. Hey, Don, before I let you go, is there anything you want to add? Want to, you know, leave our listeners with a parting shot? Anything?
Just be patient, you know, and let the process, you know, happen. Don't put the Redskins up so high thinking that they're going to go to the playoff Super Bowl next year. But just be looking at the fact that they're better and they're moving in the right direction finally.
And Donna, what time does the show air on Masson?
It comes Mid-Atlantic Sportsnet. It comes on Wednesdays and Friday nights at 10:30. It comes on Saturday nights at 8 o'clock, Saturday morning at 9 a.m., and Sunday 12 noon before kickoff.
Awesome. Hey, Donna, you know I appreciate you. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, Donna.
Thanks. It's been fun. Talk to you guys later.
Always, Donna.
All right.
Wizards game, Donna. Wizards game. She's still there? She's gone. Donna covers Wizards games. I'm trying to tag team with Donna at a Wizards game.
Oh,
covers Wizards games too. Mm-hmm. You know, since I'm back. it's a new era in the NFL as well. We'll discuss that after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene
for ages.
You dig?
Deuces. We'll be right back.
hold on. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy's out. All right. There were some great games over the weekend. Deshaun Watson and the Texans defeated the Buffalo Bills in overtime. Kirk Cousins exercised some demons and led the Minnesota Vikings to a victory over the Saints in overtime. But nothing was realer than Derrick Henry and the Tennessee Titans possibly ending the Belichick Brady Patriots dynasty. Your thoughts of wild card of the wild card playoff games?
Texans Bills game was very entertaining. Deshaun Watson making that play that set him up in overtime for the field goal was an amazing play.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins, I always thought he had it in him.
Yeah.
He definitely has the weapons on that offense to, you know, for that team to excel. But for him to make the, you know, the big pass that he did to Adam Thielen and then coming down and making that fade pass to Kyle Rudolph, I'm not going to say it exercised demons. It
shut people up for a little bit.
It shut people up momentarily, right? Yeah. He's the first quarterback, the first player to have essentially a fully guaranteed contract, even though it's short term, but, you know, it's fully guaranteed.
Yeah.
He went out and he was the reason that they won.
He's part of the reason. Dalvin Cook was a
big
guy. Well,
but he made the play.
No, he made the play. No, that's what I'm saying. I agree. No. I give
where, you know, where the major criticism about Kirk Cousins always was that if one thing in the process was messed up, you know, he was off track and he wasn't, you know, the reason why teams won.
Yeah.
He was a part of the solution, right?
To me, watching that game, Kirk was clutch. I mean, I think it's fair to say. You know, I'm not the biggest Kirk Cousins fan at all.
No, you aren't.
But I'm like, I tell people on Twitter, like, I'm real though. Like, I'm not going to, like, because I don't like him, bash him just for no reason. Like, he was clutch. I tweeted it out. Like, he was clutch. That pass to Thielen was big time. The pass, I think that was, it was a third down play. I want to say it was it Johnson? I don't know who it was. He had one out route that was clutch. I mean, he did a lot of clutch pass. The pass to Rudolph was clutch. I mean, the dude was clutch throughout the whole game. And you have credit when credit is due.
And they were able to keep up with the Saints
in
New Orleans.
And give their defense credit. Like, they shut. They made Breeze look pedestrian. You know, he made a couple big plays, but he's pedestrian.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He had some bad turnovers. They put pressure on Breeze. It was a great game plan by Zimmer. I think we have to credit to the head coach. It was a great game plan. It was funny because, you know, Kurt made the big play. Before that, I was like, man, he playing kind of scared initially. Then all of a sudden, it was like a light bulb just switched and he just was clutch. So you got to give credit when credit is due. Like, you know, I mean, exercising demons, you can't say that do it never played big in a big time game. That's what I'm saying. Like, there are games that he's played good, but they still lost. And they were like highly marketed games, but they still lost. But this is the game that it was, you know, it's prime time. All playoff games are prime time. So I want all playoff games are prime time. He won a prime time game. Pressure. You know what I mean? You lose, you're out. The season's over.
Look,
and you made the play to win the game.
Look, he went on the road in New Orleans, probably one of the hardest places to win in the playoffs, playing in that dome.
Yeah.
And can
I say this, though, too?
Go ahead. No.
I'm going to add this about New Orleans. Like, I blame Sean Payton. He has built a whiny-ass society or environment in New Orleans. So every call that they don't get, they boo and say F refs, or they chant F refs or whatever. Every call they don't get, like every call, like he's created a whining ass like environment in New Orleans.
That's fair.
You know what I mean?
But then again, if you're New Orleans, look at the
last play.
You know, when you had an opportunity to go to Super Bowl against the Rams.
Yeah,
right?
I know, I get it.
So there's definitely been, you know, they definitely have a reason to complain because there's been some missed calls
they get away with calls too, though, bro.
Yeah, they do.
They get away with calls too. You know what I mean? Like, that's my thing. Like, certain teams, like, they get away. You play the Patriots get away with a lot of calls. You know what I mean? And you never hear their fans, like, you know what I mean? Once something happens to them, like, F you ref or whatever, they get away with a lot of calls.
I mean, they do that.
You know
Patriots
what I mean?
Fans do that.
They do that? Do they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm off on it. But to the Patriots, though, man, Brady lost to Ryan Tannehill and the Titans. Like, is it over now? Is the dynasty over?
Look, I'm not – when you have Bill Belichick as your coach, a guy who's shown that he can adapt, you know, any game plan to his team to put them in the best position to win, and also to take away a team's greatest asset. I mean, he traditionally has done that. He didn't do that against the Texans. Against the Titans on Saturday evening. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's over. I think they just need to retool.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to retool. You know, we obviously see that the only wide receiver that you have is
Edelman.
Julian Edelman, and Julian Edelman just isn't the Julian Edelman he was a few years ago.
He's nobody. Nobody's harsh.
There's some things you need to go out and you need to retool that offense if you're going to keep Tom Brady. Even if, I mean, no
it
matter
like
who
he
you
out.
Get.
It sounds like he out, though.
I don't think so.
You think he's coming back?
I think if Belichick wants him back.
I don't think he wants him back. On the low. I think that's something. I think it's an in-house thing. And you know, they know how to keep secrets. But from that presser, I don't know. I think Belichick's still salty about not being able to keep Garoppolo.
He may be, but what is he going to go with?
That's the problem. What is he going next?
The rookie from Auburn. What is he going to go with?
I don't think he has his quarterback on his roster. That's the problem.
He may not, but you know, no matter which way he goes, he's going to have to retool that offense.
Definitely. All right. Predictions of the upcoming playoff games, the divisional games, Titans, Ravens, and why?
I'm going with the Ravens.
And why do you got the Ravens, my man?
Titans will not be able to keep up with the Ravens in the slightest.
Yeah, I think the defense will be all over Tannehill, and I just think that obviously it's going to be too much Lamar, man.
It's going to be too much Lamar and then that run game, man. Like, they are, the Titans are a physical defensive front, but that Ravens.
It's physical.
It's
going to be old school. You know what? It's funny. It's going to be an old school Tennessee Titans, Baltimore Ravens game. When Steve McNair was around, well, they don't have Steve McNair, but you know what I mean? Like Derrick Henry, Eddie George versus that Ravens defense. Because Derrick Henry, the Russian leader for the season, he's a monster, man.
Hey, he's a big monster. Guy. 6'3", what, 230s, 240?
Maybe more than that, man.
He's a beast. Physically, he's a beast.
Yeah, and he's got some speed to him, too.
Yeah, but the difference between the Titans playing the Patriots, who don't have any offensive weapons. I mean, who have
that good defense though?
They have a great system,
yeah.
But guys, all from wide receiver perspective, who can't get open.
Yeah.
And the Ravens is night and day.
Gotcha.
The Ravens can go with three tight ends that are going to create matchup problems for you in the middle of the field. And they also have speed on the outside.
I will say this though too. At the same time though, if the Titans are able to run the football, the game will be remarkably close. Like I really do, because they'll play the time possession game.
See, I don't necessarily agree with that. The difference between the Ravens defense and we know the Patriots defense was great.
Yeah.
But the Patriots defense was more of a bend don't break.
Yeah.
The Ravens defense is
beat
aggressive,
of course.
Create turnover.
I'm saying if they can run the football, that's my thing. I didn't say they will. I'd say if they can run the football, this game will be close.
Yeah, no, it's different. Even if you look at the way that the Patriots players are, you know, how they wrap up, contact, head to the side, drive the ball, carry it to the ground. Whereas the Ravens, we come in, first guy holds you up, second guy is going to try to strip the ball and create turnover. So it's two total different philosophies defensively.
True.
So
all right, so Texans, Chiefs.
Chiefs.
Too much what? Too much firepower?
Yeah, too much Pat Mahomes. Too much Pat Mahomes.
I think the Chiefs will win, but I'll say this, though. We saw this kid against Alabama. We saw what he did, you know, it's the Bills to come back to win that game. That team was being dominated by the Bills, and they can't, you know, Deshaun Watson put him on their back, and, hey, I got this W. If he can just, you know, if he can be Superman one more time, man.
Yeah, I mean,
he can do,
if it was a fifth, we'd both be drunk, and if my aunt had a ball, she'd be my aunt. But the difference is this Chiefs offense.
It's real. It's real.
Can score from anywhere.
Yeah, I agree.
They have too many guys that can create, you know, can score anywhere and can create matchup problems for the Texans.
Yeah.
Defense.
And the Texans defense isn't good this year. That's keep it a buck. Seahawks, Packers.
This is going to be a good one, but I'm going with Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks.
I disagree. I think the Seahawks, they play every game so close to the vest. The Packers, they're at home. The defense is good. It's good enough. This ain't the same Seahawks defense that we've seen in years. You know what I mean?
It isn't.
You know, so I like the Packers. I like Aaron Rodgers. I think this is a good matchup for the Packers to advance to the NFC Championship game.
Okay.
Niners, Vikings.
I'm going with the Vikings.
Ooh, why, brother? Too young, too inexperienced.
No, it's not necessarily that. I think that we've seen games where Kirk Cousins, when he has that confidence, he comes out and he gets on a roll.
Okay.
This Niners defense is very tough.
That's it.
You have probably the best play caller in the NFL with Kyle Shanahan, you know, at the helm for the Niners. But I think the Vikings are going to be able to make enough plays offensively and make a stop. And Mike Zimmer is going to come up with
a plan for
Garoppolo.
And that running
game. Yeah, he's going to take away the running game, and he's going to make Garoppolo beat him by himself. And I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo can do that.
I struggle with this one, too. I think it's going to be a close game. I think this will be a close game. But I think that, you know, the Saints defense wasn't a good defense. This Niners defense, in terms of the front four, is amazing. I think they're going to put the pressure on Kirk Cousins. I think we've watched Kirk Cousins here in the DMV. If you put pressure, constant pressure on Kirk Cousins, you know, he doesn't respond. You know, he doesn't respond. He responds a certain way. It's nothing against Kirk Cousins, and it's any quarterback. Let's be real. It's not just Kirk Cousins. Any quarterback. You put a lot of pressure on the quarterback, they're not going to be the same quarterback. And this Niners front, at home, first playoff game, feeding off the crowd. Yeah, I just think that's too much for Kirk Cousins in terms of the passing game. I do think it'll be a close game because I think Minnesota's defense, to what your point, Will, is I think Zimmer will have a good game plan for that Niners offense. Because if you can stop Drew Brees and that Saints offense, how hot they were, and now you're playing Kyle Shanahan and that Niners offense, and no knock on Kyle Shanahan and his offense, but, you know, that New Orleans Saints offense is dynamic. This San Francisco offense, it's a good offense. Don't get wrong.
Yeah, no, the San Francisco offense, there's a difference. The way I see it is the Saints offense has a great play caller, but they also have explosive players that can create mismatch opportunities. Yeah. You know, Alvin Kamara, then you also had Jared Cook, and then you also had Michael Thomas.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Niners, you know, George Kittle.
Yeah. Dabo Samuels. And then you got Sanders.
You know, Emmanuel Sanders.
But really, in terms of explosiveness, is that – I mean, Dabo Samuels is explosive. I'm not going to take that away from him. But there's no Kamara. There's no Kamara, you know what I mean, that you can put in mismatch situations, get him on a linebacker, isolate him. You don't have that situation. Kittle's a beast. I mean,
George Kittle's a beast.
He's the best tight end in football right now. Like, I won't even lie to you. He's the best tight end. Him and Kelce, best two tight ends in football. Not shortchanging the kid in Philadelphia, but those are the two best tight ends right now in football. But yeah, it's going to be a tough one. All right, the Nationals are making big moves to repeat as champs. We'll discuss their acquisitions after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
I'm a young money millionaire, tougher than Nigerian hair. My criteria compared to your career just isn't fair. I'm a venereal disease, like a menstrual bleed through the pencil and leak on the sheet of the tablet in my mind. Cause I don't write, cause I ain't got time. Cause my second minutes, hours go to the almighty dollar in the almighty power of that chopper. Sister, brother, son, daughter, father, motherfucker, copper. Got the Maserati dancing on the bridge. Pop it, tell the coppers, ha, 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 ha. You can't catch them, you can't stop them. I go by them goon rules. If you can't beat them, then you pop them. You can't man them, then you mop them. You can't stand them, then you drop them. You pop them, cause we pop them like over red and vodka. Motherfucker, I'm ill. Yeah. A million here, a million there. Sicilian bitch with long hair, with coconut every year, like smoking the thinnest air. I open the Lamborghini, hoping them crackers see me. Like, look at that beastie. He's a beast, he's a dog, he's a motherfucking problem. Okay, you're a goon, but what's a goon to a goblin? Nothing, nothing. You ain't scaring nothing. On some freaking bullshit, call him Dennis Rodman. Call me what you want.
call me on my sidekick. Never answer when it's private. Damn, I hate a shy chick. Don't you hate a shy chick? Had a plate of shy chicks. She ain't shy in the mood. She changed.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Will T. Ray Jeezy is out. All right, it's been reported that the Nationals have signed infielder Starlin Castro to a 2-year deal worth $12 million. Thoughts on the deal?
This is one of those under-the-radar moves that when we look back on it in August, we're going to be like, Mike Rizzo, that was a hell of a move.
The ninja.
That was a hell of a transaction.
Doing things.
Starlin Castro, at this point, hasn't lived up to the potential that everyone thought he would have as a prospect, right?
He was good with the Yankees. He had a really good year with the Yankees. Couple good years with the Yankees. He was good with the Cubs. The Cubs just traded him. I mean,
Then he was in Miami.
The Miami stint was bad for him. But he still had 20 home runs.
Yeah, but he hasn't exceeded that.
Everybody thought he'd be a superstar.
You know, people thought for him the way that Juan Soto is. I mean, people thought he would have
Soto ability with the Cubs. Yeah, I mean, he was flashy.
But if he's able to, we've seen some players. We saw a couple players last year. Get added to this Nats roster and picked up. Played at a level that they hadn't been. Previous years or earlier that year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm optimistic about it. I think you get good value from Starlin Castro for 2 years and $12 million.
I think that's a bargain. I'm going to be real with you. I texted you guys, I think this move is so huge. People don't even really understand how huge this move is. You have him at second base or third base, whatever you want to play him at. But this is a guy, because of the protection that he's going to have in the Marlins, there's really no protection. And with the Nats, he's going to have protection. I know Rendon is gone, but still, you still have Soto. You still have Turner. You have Eaton. You have guys who can hit the baseball. So when you look at what you have, it's for Castro. Like, he's a guy with protection. He got 20 home runs without protection. So just imagine with protection how many home runs he's going to have. He's going to have probably 25 to add five more home runs to it. 25 to 30 home runs. He's a guy that's is sweet with the glove, right? I mean, he's a magician with the glove. It's a good signing. It's such a good signing because you're missing with Rendon. You're missing a guy who hit 30 plus home runs. So you're going to get a guy who's going to hit you 25 homers. Then you're going to have, I mentioned, you're hoping that Soto takes another jump. He's going to have a good year. I mentioned center fielder Robles should have a better year. You know what I mean? You have guys who are going to step up and protect this guy.
The biggest thing for Robles, if Robles has more discipline at the plate.
Yeah.
Takes more walks than and doesn't swing at pitches that are outside of the zone.
You would hope.
I mean, ultimately, I would like to see Robles bat second.
That's what you would want.
That's what I want. I want to see. At this point, he isn't. If in a dream scenario, if you were able to get Eaton at leadoff, Soto second. Turner third. Eaton first, Robles batting second, Turner third, Soto fourth, and then maybe like when he's
It's tough, man.
Maybe Starlin Castro batting behind Soto, or maybe Howie Kendricks is
depending, because you don't want to play him every day either.
Yeah. Eric Thames is
a 30 homer hitter too. Yep. Strikes out a lot though. I would be real cautious of moving. No, who was Turner was leadoff hitter, right?
Turner was.
Yeah, so I would keep Turner as a leadoff. I think Eaton is just the best two guy you can have. Like, he's the typical two guy. That speed, you don't want to make Turner into thinking he has to hit a home run. That's my issue when you move somebody to three.
I understand that. You don't want him to make him think, but as Turner continues to grow.
Yeah, you would hope.
And his body continues to mature and he continues to gain more power.
Yeah.
He would, if you can get a guy like that batting third and Victor Robles with his speed.
So, ideally, this is what, because of the way they hit, right?
Uh-huh.
Robles is supposed to be real with you, it's supposed to be a three guy.
Because he's, because truth be told, he swings for fences. He's swinging for home runs. If you look at this, he's really swinging for home runs. And you would hope, because he's not, he's a free swinger. It is what it is. Some people are just, they, that's who they are. Robles is a free swinger. He's not Soto. Soto is patient. There's, it was like Adam Jones, right? I'll give you an example. Adam Jones is a free swinger. Everybody was like, man, if you just, you know, take some pitches. But that's what he is. And, you know, those bad pitches, he just hits, right? Now, on the flip side, he strikes out. You know what I mean? So, Robles is the type of player where I know when people look at him, like, he's so fast, he's dynamic, he's got speed. I think even F.P. Santangelo said it. Like, he reminds him of Juan Gonzalez. And I was like, Juan Gonzalez wasn't fast as Ricky Robles. But he's like, but it made sense because he was like, he has popped like Juan Gonzalez. He swings for the fences. His bat's electric. He's a guy, eventually, as he gets older, he will become a power hitter. But he's, to me, again, even being a three guy, you have to be patient. You know what I mean? Like, that's what made Robles, I mean, Rendon, that Rendon-Soto combination so thorough.
That's why I said I would like Turner.
Yeah, but he's not, but even him, he's has a, he's a free swinger on a low.
I mean, he's a free swinger, but he's far more patient.
Denver, I agree. Denver,
he's, far, he's a far more patient hitter, and if you bat him in front of Soto,
yeah,
you can't bat, you can't bat, you can't pitch around Turner because Turner's speed if he gets on base.
But see, if you do that, then you have to probably put Robles as leadoff because you need that real dynamic speed. Because Eaton is, as you may, people may like Eaton, but his speed has kind of went down a little bit since the leg injuries. He's not as fast. He's still fast, but not as fast. You still want that dynamic speed at, to lead off. Because at the end of the day, Turner puts a lot of pressure on your defense when he leads off.
I mean, he does.
He does a lot. So automatically, when he's on base, if he walks or whatever, that's like a double. Just counted in the books as a double. So whoever you are, is a two spot or the three spot, you know, you change. He's the table setter for everything. It's tough. You know, I ain't gonna lie. Losing Rendon makes everything complicated. It really does. It does. It makes everything complicated. But I do like the acquisition of Castro. So Will Harris, the Nats signed Will Harris. Will Harris is actually the guy that gave up the 2-run game winning home run by Howie Kendricks in Game 7. You know, for the in this top of the seventh for the Nats to win the World Series. But what are your thoughts on the signing?
I'm not mad at the signing at all. I think it's a good signing, right? Yeah. If you cut it, like if we put it all in context,
yeah,
right? You have Will Harris, along with Sean Doolittle, and they also yesterday re-signed Daniel Hudson.
Yeah,
so 7, 8, 9. You have a pretty
You have
that back end of that rotation.
It's real.
Looks good for 7, 8, 9.
Nah, it's real. I'm not gonna lie to you. It's a good it's a good bullpen now.
That's it is. Yeah, and you know, over the past 3 years, you know, whenever they went to spring training, the biggest question was always
the bullpen.
What are we gonna do with the bullpen? Mm-hmm. You know, who's gonna? You know, you knew that Mike Rizzo was capable of making an in-season trade to to fill the gaps if needed. You know, if the team was in contention, right? But this is the first time in a long time that you actually go into spring training saying the back end of the bullpen
is real. You going
is a strength.
Yeah, you like it's real. You like you look at it like now, okay, the Nats got a bullpen. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, looking at this situation that now Strauss, Scherzer,
Patrick Corbin, Anibal Sanchez,
or whoever it, between if it's Joe Ross,
Austin Roth or Eric Fetty.
Yeah, between those, who's the fifth starter, now you don't have to put so much, you know, too much pressure on those guys because you have a bullpen that can kind of like say, you know what, you get it to the seventh inning, we're good. You know
and
what I'm saying?
And then you still have Hunter Strickland, you still have Wanda Soro, you have Rainey.
That's a guy I like. I like Tanner Rainey.
I think the only thing is you don't want him to throw because he throws heat.
Heat.
You don't want
to overuse it.
Yeah, you don't want to overutilize
him. Yeah, no, I agree. I think, but I do like what the build because he got better. Like Tanner Rainey got better as the season went on.
And then also the guy, Elise, who they
is he still on the contract?
He's still on the contract.
Yeah, we'll see how he's a lefty specialist.
So
we should see how that pans out. Yeah. I'm interested about that, about him. But we'll see how that pans out. I do like – offensively, we'll see where the Nats are. Again, losing Rendon is big because, you know what I mean, he's a special bat. It's not like
– that's not something you easily replace.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Right, even if they are able to get Josh Donaldson, right? Josh Donaldson doesn't hit for average like Anthony Rendon does.
Yeah. So, yeah, he doesn't.
He doesn't.
You know, he doesn't.
Historically hasn't hit for average like Anthony Rendon. Rendon
hits for average. It's a mixture, though. You know what I mean? Like, Rendon hits for average. He's patient. Yeah. Like, that's important in baseball. Like, his batter's eye is amazing. So, he has that. He can hit home runs.
And then
he
also,
everybody in.
Defensively, you
he's
know.
He's solid, too. Yeah. I mean, Josh Donaldson isn't a bad defender, but it's just that the combination of – it's the all-around baseball player, what Rendon represents. It's too hard to replace, man. It is,
man. That's why, you know, we'll see towards, you know, when the season and, you know, how the, you know, the offense, you know, is it consistent? And then we'll look at Steven Strasburg and I truly, but the thing fans are always going to compare.
Rendon, it is. It's natural. We could have got Rendon. Should have kept Rendon over here.
Should have kept Rendon over.
No, of course. I mean,
Strasburg.
The issue, but the only thing with Strasburg would be fine, but Rendon, it's a hard person to replace, man.
Some people always say, you know, they'd rather have that bat than that arm every fifth day.
And you are already blessed with a bunch of arms, right?
Yep.
That's the thing. That's the argument you can use.
The argument but always could have been that, hey, we would have, you know, even without Strasburg, we would have had.
Scherzer,
and Corbin,
and Sanchez.
And we could develop the two puppies.
Yeah. You could use that argument. But again, I mean, I was in favor of them bringing back Strauss. I thought they should have brought back Strauss. But I get the other side of it, though. Don't get it twisted. I get the other side of it. All right. Ish Smith has been a spark plug for the Washington Wizards. Are the Wizards better off starting him over Isaiah Thomas? We'll discuss this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages. You dig? Deuces.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though, ambition, flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, it's born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, which yells you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your head. This that put the kids to bed, this that I got realness. I just kill shit, cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again, like Wimbledon.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, myself, Wole, Ray, Gigi's out. The Washington Wizards, Ish Smith has been balling of late. Should Ish Smith be starting over Isaiah Thomas?
I mean, just based off of the past, you know, since Isaiah Thomas was suspended, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, Ish Smith has, you know, been playing some great basketball. Mm-hmm. This team has been, you know, without Bradley Beal have any other. It's been going essentially with guys, you know, development players.
Yeah. They beat Boston last night.
They beat
without, Denver. They beat Denver
know,
from
yeah. Without Denver? Thomas Bryant and Bradley Beal,
yeah.
I wouldn't be opposed to it. Yeah. I mean, to me, both of those guys are kind of interchangeable. Because, I mean, if we're being realistic, I don't see either one of them having a long stay here in DC.
Yeah, I think that Ishmael could be John Wall's potential backup next season. I don't think Isaiah Thomas has a long stay in DC. I'm highly surprised. When I watch Ish Smith, I'm highly surprised at what I'm seeing. He's a guy that I've seen in the past that didn't have an outside jumper, and now he's hitting the outside shot. His pat is way better than I thought it was. Like his ball handling is freaking amazing, man. Now he can go ISO on you. It's hard to stay in front of. Now he's making a three ball. To me, he should be starting off with Isaiah. Isaiah takes a lot of bad shots. Isaiah doesn't have the same explosiveness since the injury. You can tell he's aged, and the injuries have played a part. Because even for a small guy, and I was telling somebody else, like Isaiah used to, not in games, but in practice, you would see him catch lob dunks. You see clips of him catching lob dunks. He don't have that lift on the jumper anymore.
Yeah, I mean, since the hip injury in Boston, you know, when he arguably could have been in consideration for an MVP award, he, you know, after that injury in the playoffs, you know, coming back from that injury in the playoffs for that playoff run, he hasn't looked as good. He's had some health issues. He was in Denver last year. You know, he was in Cleveland after Boston. Then I think he was in Denver last year. So, he just doesn't have that same level of explosiveness. And for a guy who's
5'8", 5'7".
Yeah. To play in the NBA with guys, you know, who you have to be guarding routinely, like 6'4", 6', you know, 6'3", 6'4". You need some explosiveness.
Yeah, I agree. I think Isaiah, I mean, to me, I'll go with Ish Smith. I think, you know, Scott Brooks is playing a political thing or not trying to hurt feelings. But I feel bad for Isaiah. I mean, his injuries have played a part of him not getting that bag, because where he was at, you know, that last year in Boston, he was supposed to get the bag, and that injury just knocked it all out for him. And obviously the loss of his sister. I just feel bad for his story. I just wish, you know, I've rooted for Isaiah Thomas. I wanted him to be healthy and be able to be an impact player, get that 1 year to show the league that, you know, he still got game. And he has game. I'm not taking that away from him, but in terms of playing winning basketball on a winning team, I don't think his game helps out a winning basketball team.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Not at this point.
Yeah.
He's the way he plays and his lack of height.
Yeah.
It's almost one of those situations where you have to build a system around him.
Exactly.
You know, from a defensive perspective, you know, with giving him some help defense, and then offensively, you have to get him going downhill.
You know,
right? You can't get him initiating the offense at the top of the key or even from the wing and think you're going to be successful.
Yeah, I agree. We'll see what the Wizards will do. But we lost a legend and a pioneer last week. We'll talk about the great David Stern after the break. You listen to Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy's out. Former NBA commissioner David Stern passed last week at the age of 77. Stern was in the hospital for a brain hemorrhage. What will you remember about David Stern?
What I'm going to remember is this is, and we've had this discussion, this is the man that helped popularize the game the first love of my life internationally, right?
Yeah,
Sometimes he took a hard line with the players, but also he did a lot to make this a players' league, you know, make it so that the players were the stars opposed to the organizations. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily agree with all the things he did, like, you know, trying to outlaw guys coming to, you know, making guys.
Well, they were, I know, I ain't like represented, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, with the
formal, I know what you're talking about.
With the formal dress wear to come into.
He's calling folks out.
Yeah.
That he's calling particular folks out.
But, you know, we've seen that even that the players have come to embrace that and kind of made it like
their own style.
Their own style, and helped to make them, you know, it's helped their branding from a fashion standpoint.
Yeah, I agree.
So I'll miss, and then one thing I'll also never forget is his interview with Jim Rome. I don't know if you remember that interview.
I know he did it
with Jim Rome.
Rome was on ESPN.
I think Jim Rome was on ESPN.
He was on.
I think he was on Showtime. Mm-hmm. But when Jim Rome trying to insinuate that David Stern fixed the 1985 NBA lottery.
Yeah.
During that interview, for Patrick Ewing, I'll always remember. That interview specifically. So I think the sport of basketball lost a pioneer, a guy who did a lot to help popularize the game and take it across borders and make it an international game that everyone has come to embrace and love. I know that we say that football is America's sport.
Yeah.
But soccer and then basketball are truly world games.
Yeah, I agree. David, I'm not the biggest. I wasn't the biggest David Stern fan, but I didn't recognize that in terms of all commissioners in sports, he was the best commissioner in sports, in U.S. sports. You know, you could say Paul Tagliabue back in, I mean, whatever. You could say Paul Tagliabue. He was pretty good. But David Stern, what he did in terms of, you know, because he branded basketball out. It wasn't just in the States. He branded it to make it a world game and a popular world game. You know what I mean? So David Stern, you know, has had initiatives in European countries, initiatives in Africa,
China.
So, you know, and had players represented in the NBA and make them ambassadors, right? You know what I mean? Like Yao Ming, the ambassador of China. Dikembe Mutombo, ambassador of Africa. So Dirk Nowitzki became, I don't know if he's truly an ambassador, but he became a symbolic ambassador
for European basketball.
So David Stern empowered individuals. Like Will said, like he made it not about the team, but about the individual. Though I did have issues with about how he singled out certain individuals, but still at the same time.
Yeah, look, it is what it is.
You gotta give credit when credit is due. You know, he built this the NBA and to made it a powerhouse. I mean, it was, you know, Bird and Magic. And he built off that. And then he went off with Jordan, and he knew his cash cows, and he knew how to market them, and he knew what to do. You know what I mean? To make them the symbol of his game. So therefore, people from all countries, not just United States, but all countries and all continents and everywhere, to see, okay, this is how our game is played. All race, all ethnicities, and even to be honest with you, I mean, how he worked the Olympics. You know, we're gonna change it.
Yeah.
We're gonna have all our best players represent the U.S., the United States in basketball. And what did that do? All these individuals that have seen the NBA game from a distance got to see these stars up close and personal on one team. And it made individuals who watched that team want to become NBA basketball players or basketball players.
Absolutely.
So, you know, David Stern deserves a lot of credit.
Absolutely, man. Rest in power, David Stern. You know, for me, I didn't know David Stern, but what he accomplished and, you know, how he – like I said, how he helped to expand my first love in life, which is basketball.
Yeah.
You know, I'll forever be remember from that and be appreciative.
R.I.P. David Stern, man. Rest in paradise, my man. Yep. All right, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Search The Urban Sports Scene. And also tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. I want to thank the champ, Gary Russell Jr., for being on the show. And thank his younger brother, super lightweight, Gary Antoine Russell. Appreciate you, those two, for being on the show. Will, you anything you want to say before we close this thing out?
Rest in power to Ghost, man. You know, it was confirmed on Sunday.
Do you think it's really dead? Do you think that maybe it was like a witness protection thing? That's what I'm hoping, bro.
Nah, man. Ghost is dead, man. He's gone.
Did you like the episode?
Yeah, I did.
See, I liked the episode. Why?
I'm taking it back.
I didn't love the episode, but I didn't hate it. You know what I mean? I wish they went another direction. I wanted it to be the aftermath rather than going the storytelling of that day.
I like the perspective, man. Okay. I like the perspective, man. I'm interested to see how the Final Four ends.
All right. But I don't care about Pros, though, FYI.
Pause.
I don't care about her story.
That's kind of harsh, bro.
I'm just saying, I don't care about her story.
That's kind of harsh.
What did she ever bring to the show? But wine over Angela. What really? What has she brought to the show?
I mean, but maybe... I mean, I think that important elements would be revealed during her episode.
All right, man. 2 bits of G, dog.
2 bit is a G. Spanky, you know.
You a sucker. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You did?
Deuces.
Hey, Mac, leave us out, big homie.